Good morning. Welcome to this morning's panel discussion entitled Passing the Ball, How Working with Others Through Service and Sponsorship Contributes to Recovery. My name is Kate, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Hello, and your leader for today's panel. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Please take a moment now to turn off all cell phones or other electronic beeping devices. Our OA preamble states, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and recover from compulsive overeating. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions. OA is not affiliated with any religious sect or denomination, political organization, or institution. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. I have stated that I am a compulsive overeater. Are there any other compulsive overeaters present? Great. Our three panelists will share their experience, strength, and hope on today's topic for approximately 12 minutes each. After that, we will take questions. There are pencils and paper and an Ask It basket on each table. Please write your question on a sheet of paper, fold it, and put it in the Ask It basket. Please specify if the question is to a particular panelist or to anybody. Our first speaker today is Pamela.
Hi, my name's Pamela, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Pamela.
Hi. Oh, it's so great to be here. I have to thank you for asking me to participate in my favorite subject, service and sponsorship. Let's do the numbers. I have been in the program since 1994. I have I don't know if it's 16 or 17 years and 9 months and 15 days, but I just forgot how much abstinence I had, but it's a big number. I'm a professional yo-yo. My weight has vacillated between 120 and 220, and before I went into program, if you added up how much weight I gained and lost, it was 685 pounds. So I got to participate in all of this disease. I got to be a binger. I got to be a grazer. I got to be a bulimic. Of course, I didn't know I was a bulimic. I thought I just had a very clean colon. And it was going to give me extra energy. Yes, right. And I got to be anorexic even. I got to go 90 days on, 200 calories a day, feeling like I was way too fat. So anyway, I got to do all of this disease. How was I so lucky to get this disease? Well, I haven't figured that out, but I know food was really always very important to me. And I had no control over it. I always thought I could eat just one, eat just two, but it always seemed like I ended up with the whole package. And I probably could still do that today. By the grace of God, I have an abstinence. And my abstinence has changed. It started with no sugar. It went to three meals a day. Then I added the no sugar. Then I added the no wheat. This didn't happen overnight. Abstinent April 15th, 1994. I didn't give up sugar till July 5th, 1998. That's how long it took. But I got it, and I'm so happy now because food isn't a problem for me. How did that happen? I think the miracle happened through service and sponsorship. When I first came in the rooms, I heard this. The thing that kept me was somebody got up and said, before program, I really had a terrible relationship with my mother. And, we couldn't even talk, and it was terrible. And I'm having lunch with her Wednesday, and it's like, yeah, well, Wednesday I'm going out for lunch. There was no pressure on it, and I said, that's what I want. I want to be able to get over some resentments. But you know, my main thing is I'm very, very, very self-centered and self-absorbed. Everything is about me. How it affects me, what it did to me. I mean, everything in the world is about me. Really, bottom line, it all reflects back on me. So when I came to my first meetings, I heard somebody say, well, you know, when I came into the program, I would get there late and I'd leave early. And I said, you know, all of you guys are a bunch of losers. I really don't even want to be involved with you, but I just want to show everyone that I'm not as sick as you are. So I'm going to come early and I'm going to leave late because I'm tough. Well, okay, I was able to do that, but I was unable to let anybody really get to know me, because who would want to know this ugly mess that lived inside this person? I would turn everybody off. I would scare them. So I figured out a trick. And the trick is I walked in early and I walked up to someone who was shuffling around and said, I can help you with the chairs. Do we put like 3 or 4 chairs in this row? And at the end of the meeting, when everybody was talking, I would run to the trash can and say, where do I empty the trash cans? And you know, after a few months, everybody got to know me and everybody thought I was really nice. They didn't know I was the ugliest person in the whole world and I didn't know what was going on. But you know, that's still what I do. I sponsor a bunch of people. I do service on all levels. Did I wake up this morning saying, oh wow, I'm so excited I got to turn the alarm to 7 o'clock on the one day I get to sleep in and schlep down through traffic to the airport and I have another event going on that I'm in charge of? No, this is not what I woke up wanting to do, but I'm doing it. And doing it, taking that contrary action, is what lifts me up. Somebody asked me to speak at a meeting, and you know, it was like, 25 minutes away, and it was on a Friday night. So I very frankly said, I don't like traveling at night. I don't like being in a lot of traffic. On the list of things that I want to do, this is like one notch above having my fingernails pulled out with pliers, but you know, I'm going to say yes. And what I'm going to tell you is my life is happy. I love my life. I love my body. Should I say that again? I love my life and I love my body. I mean, if I tripped over $100,000, a few wrinkles might disappear, a few sags might disappear, but basically, I'm really happy. And I think it's just from doing the deal. And the deal is, if somebody says to me, would you be my sponsor? There's only one answer I have, and that's yes. I hear my pet peeve. I hear people say, oh, I'm full. I'm full? Full? I'm a compulsive overeater. I don't comprehend full. I never have, probably never will. Okay, so I don't say I'm full. I say yes. And I leave it up to my higher power. My higher power got me a life that's happy. My higher power will work it out. You know, I try to find him a slot. And of course, you know, 90% of the people that ask you never say no again. But just think what harm you could do if to one of those people you said, no, I'm not available. Yes is the only answer. People call you to speak at meetings. Yes is the only answer. People call you to be a delegate, do this, whatever. Yes is the only answer to anything that has to do with service and anything that has to do with sponsorship. And really what it does is I stop stressing about and getting completely focused on the fact that on Friday before I came here, my dog of 15 years I had to put down. And I could have just stayed at home and, you know, eaten. nonstop over that. But you know, I showed up at the birthday party because I had a commitment here. And everybody here was really nice to me. They acted like they liked me. They acted like they sincerely felt bad for me. And I still don't understand it, but I know if I did not do my service and if I did not sponsor people, it wouldn't happen, because I would continually be in myself. Again, I cannot emphasize how this is a truly contrary action for me. The phone rings sometimes and I think, oh Jesus, I have to hear, I'm going to drive into the donut store again, you know, like, but you know, I take the call and I say, how are you doing? And I'm going to drive into the donut store or whatever, you know, I'm mad at my boss. This isn't working out. My mother is not talking to me. Well, what can we do about that? What can we do? Let's do some affirmations. Let's do a gratitude list. And as I feel that energy shifting of other people going from the negative to the positive, being in a neutral space and accepting the things they cannot change. Oh yeah. That's what it's all about. Then I find the strength to look and accept the things I cannot change. I used to think I could change anything and everything because I was like totally in charge. And I could just make everything the way I want it. And, oh, did I forget to mention I'm not perfect yet? Did I forget to mention that yesterday at my free lunch, oh my God, I just have to tell you this, I walked up to the lunch chairman and said, the vegetarian selection really sucks. You know, that plate is full of carbos. Who did this? I said, it's not... falafels on it. She said, take the falafels off. I said, it's got tabbouleh on it. That's got, yeah, it's got couscous on it. She says, take it off your plate. I said, there's nothing left on my plate. You know, this is not enough food for me. So, I guess I still have the disease, right? But I was able to immediately, as soon as I got enough of the leftover food in me, I was able to make an amend. I was able to see what I did wrong, but I'm not perfect. But I'm okay with not being perfect, because I work with others who, as I work with them, I learn to accept them. I see them accepting me, and my bottom line abstinence is achieved, and that is I love myself. And they always say, stay here, we will love you till you can love yourself. And my bottom line abstinence is loving myself. And if I didn't continually get the attagirls from doing my service, if I didn't continually get, thank you, Pam, that really helped. I don't even know what I said, okay? You know, I still talk about myself a lot. It's still a lot about me. I'm out there doing service, but it's about me. But part of me is about giving the service. And I'm always going to be self-centered and self-serving and self-absorbed. It's the way I'm wired. But if I keep practicing my sponsorship and make that connection through my higher power as I reach out to the still suffering compulsive overeater, if I reach out and do service that I sure as heck don't want to do, I'm going to get over my disease. And the gifts I get are just unbelievable. Like I said, I like my body, I like my mind, I like my spirit, and I love all of you. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Pamela. Our next speaker is Harlan.
Hi, I'm Harlan. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Harlan.
I came in 1979, and I've lost a little over 500 pounds since then. I currently have 12 years of abstinence. At the end of his life, Dr. Bob said, carry a message, and if you must, use words. For thousands and thousands of years, religion, philosophies said, this is what God did for us, now go tell others. Because God understands the human ego infinitely better than I am able to understand it. And what he understands is happiness will begin where selfishness ends. I must get out of me, 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 me. What is the root of my trouble, it says in the big book? Self-centered fear. What is the root of my problem? Selfishness, self-seeking, anger, fear, dishonesty. In order for me to have a life free of them, I need to bring God into the equation. And how I do that very specifically is through working the steps. When I look at the 12th step, it's a three-part step. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Now, if I'm going to sponsor anyone, the very first requirement that I have is I must myself be in recovery. I'm either spreading the illness or I am spreading the recovery. There's no middle ground. And I am carrying a message whether I want to or not. There is no fooling a compulsive overeater. There is no do what I say, not what I do. They see through me like a window. When my daughter was not quite 2 years old, I was in relapse. We were living in Eugene, Oregon at the time. I'm born and raised in Chicago. Those of you who know me know that. And I now live in Scottsdale, Arizona. But we lived for 9 years in Oregon. My daughter was not quite 2 years old. It was a Sunday, just like this morning. And my then wife was unloading tons of groceries and weighing and measuring and putting things in bags. And my little daughter, still in her diaper, she was not quite two, she picked up her little hand. You know, when they're just not quite two, you still want to kind of eat them. You know, they got that the pudgy little arm kind of thing, you know. And she looked so cute. She picked up her arm and she turned her head. She opened up the refrigerator about an inch and a half. She turned her head and she said, shit, Esther, there's nothing in here. I wonder where she got that from. Fast forward, I'm in recovery. She's 16 and I have 12 years of abstinence. Fast forward to recovery. We're now living in Scottsdale, Arizona. Now remember when she opened the refrigerator, that was the message that I was passing to this little baby of mine. That was what I was showing her. People will forget what you're saying and look at what you're doing. She walked into my little rec room in Scottsdale, and I was watching the premiere of a show on network television about a guy. He had a list of all the people that he had wronged, and he was going to go back and make it right with them, make amends to them, as it were. She walked in and said, he's just doing his eighth and ninth step, right, Dad? That was the message she was getting in recovery. So the very first requirement for me to do any sponsorship is to be in recovery. Now, when Dr. Bob was visited by Bill Wilson had been sober since the middle of December, and they first met in May. So it was 6 months, is my math correct? 6 months of sobriety from the middle of December to the 5 months. Thank you, Hank, because my math is fuzzy. It's 5 months when he called on Dr. Bob. When Dr. Bob and Bill called on Bill Dotson, Alcoholics Number 3, Bob had 18 days of sobriety. He got sober on the 10th, and they called on Bill Dotson on June the 28th. I do not need a certificate from Princeton or Yale or Harvard to go and help others. All I need is a giving spirit and a giving heart. All I can do is be loving and kind, remembering always that the second part of the 12th step is we try to carry this message, not a message, not some message, not my message certainly, but the message of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is the message of recovery. And I have to remember that for someone who has been summarily cast aside by their closest friends and relatives. They have been told that they were fat, and they have been told that they were unacceptable, and they have suffered unbelievable, pitiful, and incomprehensible demoralization at the hands of people that were closest to them and the world at large, that they were stamped unacceptable because of their weight, their lack of willpower, their stupidity. They're coming in broken. Some wait in parking lots outside several meetings before coming in. Most come in, go to a few meetings, and don't come back until they have been beat and mangled beyond recognition. And if they're not ready to crawl in the door, they will not stay. And they're scared. And they don't know what we're talking about. And they don't know us. And they don't want to be there, but perhaps, luckily, mercifully, they're out of ideas on how they're going to control this themselves. And so right before they go in and do surgeries, or sometimes after they've had the surgeries and the doctors, they come in. They throw on a dress. They throw on a pair of pants. And they venture out into a Tuesday night when it's below zero in Chicago, and they go to the cold, freezing basement of a church. What I can do is love them. What I can do is stick my hand out and say, welcome, I'm Harlan, I'm glad you're here. To that person, that means a lot. If you have a recovery in you, you can light them up. They will not remember much of what you say. They will remember how you make them feel. And to that person, they are scared to death. To the world, you are a person. To that person, you can be the world. You can give them something they can't buy. You can give them something that they can't find in a store. You can give them acceptance. You can show them that maybe you have had a brother who died. Maybe you were raped too. Maybe your husband left you too. Maybe your wife left you too. They're not really looking for the information they think they're looking for. They will come back because of identification. You can send them home with something that they can't buy, and it's hope. Maybe you smiled at them and you told them a little bit about your story and your share, and you gave them the courage to come back so that they could come home and say, I met a lady there that was wearing a green jacket, and she was talking about her husband had cancer too. Maybe she was talking about something that was an identifiable denominator that the Weight Watchers lecturer and the TOPS lecturer and the people at Nutrisystems could not give her. And maybe, just maybe, she'll come back. And when she does, through that identification, through the pain, through the muck of the food, through the filth of what this illness does to our lives, the hurricane that the food wrought in her life or his life, they can come back with hope that perhaps if you took these actions and you recovered, maybe they don't want to take these actions. It may be begrudging. Maybe they're not sure why they need to make 3 outreach calls or go to 90 and 90. But maybe they will begin to take actions which they do not yet believe in, and a recovery in their life will begin to emerge. Don't miss that. Don't miss that. The 12th step promises on page 100. There's promises all through this book. I almost cringe when people say we're going to read the promises. You don't have enough time in the meeting to read the promises. But on page 100, it says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. follow the dictates of a higher power, not the suggestions, the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in the new and wonderful world no matter what your present circumstances. And lastly, the 12th step is to practice these principles. What are the principles? They're the steps in all of our affairs. And so many times, errantly, we turn to the 12 and 12 in a step meeting. The steps are in the big book. That's why there's the family after, to the employer, to the wife, and so on. Because this is meant to be practiced in all areas of my life. The easiest place for me to practice this is here in OA. I love you, maybe you love me, maybe you don't. But that's okay. The harder place for me to practice this is in the business world. And the hardest of all places to practice this is in the home. I'm not married any longer. I'm divorced now 6 months. But, you know, if I'm not careful, I will treat people that I see at the grocery store or out on the street with more love and dignity and respect than my own closest friends. Because this is meant to be practiced unilaterally in all of our affairs. And this is the greatest way of life in the world. There is an unbroken chain. Ebby came to see Bill because one of the Oxford Group tenets was to give testimony, which we do with our 12th step. And he was giving testimony to Bill. And Bill gave it to Bob. And Bob gave it to Bill Dotson. There's an unbroken chain of miracles between Roland Hazard and Seba Graves carrying the message to Ebby. Ebby carried the message to Bill. Bill carried it to Bob. And from that moment, that message reached you. You owe. Pass it on with love. Not your message, the message of this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't get you abstinent, but I can help you if you want to do this. And if they don't want to do this, leave them alone. It tells us in chapter 7, ask them, are you willing to stop compulsively overeating? Are you willing, it says. And if they're not willing, leave them alone. You may spoil a future chance. My time's up. I'll shut up. Thanks.
Thank you, Harlan. Our final speaker is Sandy M.
Hi, I'm Sandy. To qualify, I have 24 years of abstinence, and I wouldn't be here without this program. And all I can say is ditto, 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 ditto. I remember when I first walked into these rooms, and I went to a Friday night candlelight meeting, and I sat in the back of the room, and I was crying, and I had tried everything. I didn't know what to do. And after the meeting was over, all these people came up to me, put their arms around me, and gave me phone numbers, and said, if you want to talk, you know, I'm available to talk to you and everything else. And because of that, the response I got, because of also finding out that I fit in these rooms, that I wasn't crazy, that it wasn't just my head doing this, that there was other people out there that felt the same way and going through the same thing that I did, I just kind of took my shoulders and put them down. And because of those hugs and because of those numbers, I thought, I'm in the right place. I'm in the right place. I remember going, from that night, I became abstinent. From that Friday night meeting, I became abstinent. And I remember going to meeting, to meeting, to meeting, and hearing about sponsorship, the tools, hearing about sponsorship, the steps, the service, all this in the eight tools. And I remember getting a sponsor because they said, you can't work this program alone. I tried to work it by myself for 37 years. And I got nowhere except in trouble. Became fatter, started hating myself. I just wanted to die. And I got a sponsor. And the sponsor was just so sweet and just put her arms around me and said, this is what I would like you to do. And gave me a guide of how to work this program and made suggestions. And, you know, suggestions was write down your foods that were bad for me. What was I willing to do to get where I wanted to be? And I was willing to do anything. Anything, because I did not want to be where I was. I did not want to go on living anymore the way I was. So I followed what that sponsor told me. And I've gone through a couple sponsors. I had a sponsor for 20 years that I just changed sponsors recently. And each sponsor has given me a different outlook, but it has helped me get through the program. They have taught me how to sponsor. I know when I go into a meeting, I always tell newcomers, I'll go up to newcomers and give them my phone number and say, you can call me at any time. My phone is open to you at any time. I don't care what time it is. They call me during the day at work. I take the phone calls. I never say I can't talk to you. I'm there for anybody who needs to talk. That helps me work the program. It keeps me in the program. Because what I may say to somebody is what I need to hear. Because that's the way this program is. Because we're sponsors doesn't mean we're up here all high mighty. We're down the same level as everybody else in this program. Nothing makes a sponsor any better than anybody else. I don't care how much you know about the big book or how much you know about this or how much you know about that. We're all the same. And we learn from sponsees. We learn from newcomers. We learn from everybody around us in OA how to help other people. I love getting out there and helping people. I have come so far in my life. So far, I never thought I'd be where I am. I'm 63 years old. I have the best life in the world. I'm in a relationship that I never thought I would be in. I'm in 26 years in a relationship. I have friends in this program that I absolutely love. They're my family. I don't have friends like that outside the program. I know because of this and helping people, I can call anybody at any time, any place, and say, I need help. What a miracle. Where else can you do that? Or that my sponsees can call me. Or even outreach calls. I'm there for outreach calls. All the time. All the time. And yes, I put mine full on my sponsor thing. Because I want to make sure I have all the time in the world to help the people I'm helping get through whatever they're going through and get through the steps. I can't take on 25 people and give them everything all the same of what they need. To me, that's not being selfish, it's helping people. For me, that's what I have to do. Because I still have to take care of myself. If I don't take care of myself, how do I spread the word to somebody else? So I love sponsoring. You know, I am there. Service, I can't tell you when I haven't given service. I keep saying, okay, I'm done with giving service. And what do? I'm there giving service. I came in this program, and the first thing I did was become secretary after so many months or a year or whatever it was. First I became a timer. Then I did the secretary of every meeting I was ever at. And then I did, I got on the San Fernando board and was the, what's it called? I forgot. I did all the events. I did that for a couple of years. And then I became chairperson of the San Fernando Valley Intergroup. And then I became fifth edition of the San Fernando Valley Intergroup. And then I said, you know what, I got to stop. And what did I do? Now I do the dance every year for the San Fernando Valley Intergroup. I'm on Region 2 committee. You know, I give service because I know that's what, how I get back what I need. All of you, all the people before me gave service and showed me the path to be, how to work this program. I could never have worked this program without the service of all of you and without the sponsorship of everybody. So when I give back service, I'm saying, you know what? Thank you, thank you, thank you. I ask all my sponsors to give service. I don't care if you work on a committee. I don't care if you do timing. I don't care if you pick up trash and put the chairs up. Service keeps you coming back to meetings, keeps you in the program. I know by giving service, I had to go to that meeting because I wasn't going to leave and run away like I had done and everything else in my life. I needed to be present, and that's how I could be present. In my life now, I'm present at my job. I'm there to give service at my job. And somebody in here knows how my job is. We used to have 2 and 3 people at my job, and now I do everything by myself. But you know what? I'm thankful I'm there and can give service to the company. I'm thankful I have something. I'm thankful for the life I have. I'm thankful that I can go to the gym and I can lift weights like guys. You know, I never thought that I could be where I'm at. And that's because of what I got back from this program. People saying to me, you can do whatever you want to do. My sponsors saying, get out there and take that step. Try to take that step. Try to do something that you've never done. Make yourself available. Be there for everyone. And be there for yourself. Between sponsorship and service and being abstinent, I mean, that takes a lot of your time. You know, I get up in the morning, okay, what do I need to do? Okay, I got to do this for service. Okay, I got to do this for sponsorship. Oh, yeah, my abstinence. And I would not give up my abstinence for anything. My abstinence is the most important thing in my life. I became a diabetic at the age of 47. I'm on a pump. I got type 1. And I had to change my food, even from what I was eating then. And you know what? I did what I had to do. I had to make a lot of changes in my life. And now I love helping people that are diabetics. I get referred to a lot of people who come in this program and are diabetic. And I'm there to give service to all of those because it's something I know about. My doctor told me I'm the healthiest diabetic in his practice, and I follow exactly what I was told to do. You know why? I don't want to die. I don't want to lose a foot. I don't want to lose my eyesight. I don't want to have a heart attack. I want to live till I'm 120. I may be a lot shorter than I am. I'm only 5 feet, but, you know, I'll get around. And it's because of this program that I strive to be a better person. And no, I'm not perfect. And sometimes I could be a bitch. But you know what? I'm not perfect. I have faults. But you know what? I'm not as bad as I was before. And it's because of my sponsees, a lot of times. Because when I hear them talk to me, it's like, yeah, you're right. Hearing new people talk and say things to me is like, I remember that. I was in a workshop yesterday, and this one girl we were reading in groups, and she said things I forgot about. And it was like, thank you. Thank you for saying that because I forgot about that. You know, giving service and sponsorship are so important because we can't do things on our own. We've tried and we've tried and we tried. But here we are sitting in this room trying to get recovery, being here all weekend, doing whatever we need to do to move on in our life. So all I can say to everybody is keep coming back. Do whatever you can to give service. Be there for people. Don't turn your backs. And love what you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, panelists. It is now time for questions. So let's see here. Okay, this is for everybody. Have you ever had to let go of a sponsee? If yes, why?
Pamela, compulsive overeater, yep. You know, they didn't want to do the deal. And when somebody calls and I say, you need to get abstinent, you need to refrain from having a relationship, you know, those things we're supposed to do to begin with, and they don't do it, what I have done is just when they start talking about these problems, I say, I don't really have time to talk about that right now. If you'd like to talk about the writing you've done, if you'd like to talk about something else, fine. And then we part our ways.
Normally for me, it's in the steps. I'm not there to hear words. I'm there to see actions. I ignore the words. I watch the actions. It says in Dr. Addict Alcoholic, it says, the world was judging me by my intention, by my actions, but I was judging me by my intentions. I don't want to really hear that you intend on doing this. I want to see you doing this. And normally I don't have to really let go of people. They will let go of themselves, unfortunately. They may not be ready, or I may not be the vessel that God has chosen to carry them the word. So I don't really know what it is that's going to cause this person to take the actions, but what I've done in the big book and what I've shown them is not sufficient. I recently got a call, not too long ago, it was a man who called me. He found me through someone who nagged him. He hasn't been out of the house in 15 years. He's like an agoraphobic type of situation, and he doesn't own any outer garments. He says that his mother brings him underwear and food and everything else, and he hasn't been out of doors in like 15 years. And when we went through, tried to go through some of the doctor's opinion together, he told me he's not a compulsive overeater. He says he weighs over 400 pounds because his mother nags him. Well, where am I going to go with that? You know, where am I going to go with that? There's not much I can do. So I would agree with what you said, and that is if they don't want to do it, the big book tells me if they are not willing to stop compulsively overeating for the rest of their life and they don't want to do this, leave them alone. It may spoil a future chance for them to recover. So, yeah.
Yes, I have let go of sponsees, but I hold on to them as long as I can, and I give them hope. And that's all I can do. I can ask them to please do the best that they can do. Because like me, I'll be honest, I have a hard time reading and comprehending. And I've had it all my life. All my friends say I'm like ADD. And thank God that my sponsors did not just drop me, did not let me go. They worked with me. I do whatever I can do to help them move along. If it comes to the point where they finally are not doing, are not trying, if I hear they're not trying, then it's not, I can't do anything for them. And I have to say to them, the last step that I do with them is write what you want from this program. Tell me what you want. If they come across and write and say, this is what I want, and I say, are you willing to do that? Bottom line, are you willing to do that? Show me that you're willing to do that. If they don't at that point, then I have to say, I'm sorry, but I don't think you've hit bottom yet. And I really think you need to really think about what you want in your life and what you want to do to get better. When you get to that point, give me a call. I'm there for you if you need to make an outreach call. Because I just don't want somebody to leave and walk out the door and stay sick. you know, because I know what I was like. So, that's it.
Thank you. Okay, next question. I know service is good for me, but I don't like doing it. How can I convince myself to do it?
Service. Oh, I love service. You know, all these times, all these years, I keep saying, no, I'm not going to do anymore. I'm not going to do anymore. I'm not going to do anymore. Service keeps me coming back. Service keeps me in this program. I don't care how much you hate it or how much you don't want to do it. What has kept you abstinent? What has kept you believing in a higher power? What has kept you in this program? What has kept you to have a sane life? It's not just being abstinent. It's not just sitting in the rooms. It's giving service and giving back and showing other people that come in, look how I'm giving back. Look what I'm doing to stay abstinent. I'm doing everything that I can to work this program. I'm doing everything in my power to listen to God. My higher power shows me signs and tells me what to do. I listen to my higher power. I'll sit there and say, I don't want to do this. And all of a sudden I'm raising my hand. Okay, yeah, I'll take that position. You know what? That's what my higher power wanted me to do. And then I'm thankful afterwards that I took that position. And that keeps me abstinent. That keeps me working this program. And I love, as much as sometimes I don't want to do it, once I get there, I love doing service. Thanks.
I just do it one day at a time. If I realize that I had a 2-year commitment to do something very overwhelming, I don't know if I could do it, but I can do it one day at a time. And so if you're having trouble with service, say, well, I'll just look at it for doing it a little bit and then see what happens. You don't have to sign up for the rest of your life. You know, you could sign up for the next week, and if you can't really handle it, God will. And either you'll have the position or you won't, but one day at a time.
When I hear somebody say to me, I don't want to do service, what I'm really translating that in my mind to hear is, I'm afraid I won't do it perfectly and people will yell at me and they won't like me. That's what I really hear. And what I remind those people of is, this is not a perfect world and you're not going to do it perfectly. And if there's 100 compulsive overeaters in the room, there's going to be 123 reasons why you did it wrong. But the bottom line is still this. Happiness begins where selfishness ends. Bill Wilson says in his story that he found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. He found that in working with another alcoholic, he didn't have to drink that day. So I can very selfishly do service this way. I really don't give a darn who gets abstinent when I do a big book study or when I travel the country to do whatever I do for OA. All I can tell you is I have not found it necessary to compulsively overeat while I was at the big book study or on the way home. So for that day, I remained abstinent. Stop worrying about doing it perfectly. Stop worrying about what other people think. You're not going to please them all anyway. But just go out there and try it. Pick something easy that you can do, that you want to do. Even if you don't want to do, it'll change your life.
Thank you. For everyone, have you changed sponsors? Why? And when is it time? When is it time to move on from a sponsee? We can answer that.
I've had several sponsors. I don't really have an answer to how it works. But I can tell you that when I first came in the program and I heard about it, I wasn't going to do it till everything was absolutely perfect. So like before I went to my first meeting, I interviewed sponsors who a friend knew. And that sponsor decided after 4 weeks she wasn't really a compulsive overeater. She was going to go to another program. So you see what that got me. Then my sponsor passed away, and I had to find another sponsor, and I got all my energy up, and I heard somebody speaking, and I went up and I said, "Would you be my sponsor?" And they said, "No, I don't sponsor women." So I turned around to the person that I've been sitting next to at many meetings and said, "What? Because would you be my sponsor?" That was the best sponsor. So there's no rhyme or reason. I'm not in charge.
I've changed sponsors several times. I just actually changed. One of the things that I've done is I've moved. I moved from Chicago to Oregon, Oregon to Arizona. And I believe that it is very important for me to have a sponsor that meets two criteria or three. Number one, I want one that's very, very big book orientated, and only the big book. That's really the only thing I want to talk about is the big book with my sponsor. I'm not really interested in the, there's some good information in the 12 and 12, or there may be some good information in some of the OA literature and that. I'm really not interested in utilizing it for my recovery, because for me it's just not, it's not there, it doesn't work. So what I want to do is find somebody who's going to do that. Number two, they have to be people, in my opinion, who will not allow me 1 inch of wiggle room, because I love to lie with the best of them. And I love to circumvent work that needs to be done with the best of them. And this new sponsor yanked another fourth step out of me in the aftermath of the divorce. And this was the best medicine I ever got. And they have to be people, in my opinion, for me, that can communicate with me well and that have hit like my similar type of bottom in that, and I can relate to them. And for me, that works. For me, that's what works. Was there another part to the question? If there was, I forgot it. I'm drawing a blank spot.
We kind of covered it. Okay. Sponsees.
Sponsees. Have I changed sponsees?
Sponsors,
yes.
And it said, yeah, when is it time to move on from a sponsee?
Sounds like you guys covered that.
Do you want to add anything to that? Do you want to add anything to that question?
I just said I had changed sponsors. I had, for me, I went to different meetings and I listened to people speak until I heard someone that I could relate to, that had my story. And that's how I found my sponsor that I had for like 20-something years. I had a couple sponsors before that, but what happened was I didn't feel they were giving me what I needed. And if I'm not getting what I needed, I find it hard for me to work the program. So I went and changed sponsors until I found this one. And I stayed with my sponsor for a long time, but my sponsor got very ill. And I thought, and it was better for her to take care of herself. And then I went to a new sponsor who, I also need someone who will work with me with my condition, with my, the way I can work the program. I can't have somebody that says, "I want you to sit down and I want you to write, and I want you to write all this, and then read the book." If you do that to me and I sit down and read, I may have to read that page 10 times before I can understand what it says. And that will drive me insane. I'll have to throw the book away, because my head just doesn't do it. I now have a sponsor who we sit down and we meet and we read through the big book together, and we talk about and underline the big book. And I also want someone who works the program and is abstinent and has a lot of recovery. To me, that shows me that they've done the program. I can't have someone who's got, doesn't really have the recovery, no matter how great they sound. I need somebody who can show me what they did. And that, to me, is how I look at finding a sponsor. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, next question. Should you fire a sponsee if they don't call, since sponsorship is really for my recovery? Yeah. What do you say to sponsees who want to jump into dating and relationships as soon as they become abstinent? I have been told they need 1 year. I also have seen when we put down food, we want to pick up people or sex.
Well, let me just say I'm available.
Me too.
No, there is absolutely nothing in the big book that says something about dating or picking up relationships. We are not the arbiter of anyone's sex life. I am not here as a sponsor to give you marital advice, financial advice, vocational training, or anything. I am not here for any of those things. If it is not rectifiable in the big book, then my job is to ask you to take what you want and leave the rest. So if you're in a situation where you feel that you want to enter into a relationship or you want to do whatever you want to do, if you're in a situation where I'm sponsoring you and you want to enter into a relationship or you want to do whatever it is in those veins that you want to do, I say, therein lies the question, therein lies the answer, and that is what I would tell you if you were my sponsee. If you're asking me about it, you may have some trepidation, and if you have trepidation, let's just think about that. Let's pray for guidance on that. But there is absolutely nothing in the big book that verifies that old thing of no relationships the first year and don't move the first year or whatever. There's nothing in the book about that.
All right. My views on this is that if you come into program and you hit bottom and you've just gotten out of a relationship or you're in a relationship, say you just got out of a relationship, I do then ask my sponsees to first work through the relationship they have just gotten out of before they jump into another one. Because in this program, as we get abstinent, we also change. We become different people. We're not the same person as you go along. We're not. I changed in my relationship so much that my partner turned around to me and said, "Who are you?" You know? I don't want them to stop having relationships, but I'd like them to look at what's going on right now before they jump into another one. Write about the relationship. Talk about the relationship. What do you have to do for yourself before you go into another relationship? I also think that give 6 months before you jump into another one. Start working the program. Get into the programs. And, you know, I let the people do what they want. They can do what they want. I only suggest. I can make suggestions. If they want to follow them, they can follow them. If they don't, then I work with them not following some of the suggestions because maybe they're not ready for those suggestions that I make. The only suggestions that I really, you know, want them to do is be abstinent and work the program to be abstinent, stay abstinent. As far as life goes, I'm there for them. If they have questions, I will answer them. I will make my suggestions, like I said. And they can go from there. I'm here to listen to them and help them.
Okay. Thank you. What's the biggest action you took in regard to your higher power? Last question.
Work the steps.
What's the biggest action you took in regard to your higher power?
Acted as if.
My biggest action for my higher power is do whatever I need to do in this program, which means the whole program.
That's it. It is now time to close the meeting. Thank you, Pamela, Harlan, and Sandy M. I hope you are all enjoying our 51st birthday party. This is the last day of the weekend, and we still have a few more activities. I hope we'll all be together again next year. Until then, keep coming back. Please stand and join me in a third step prayer. God,
I offer myself to thee, to fill with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Amen.
Keep coming back and work it, and work it, and work it.
So work it.
Thank you, Pamela.
Sorry about those four cups of coffee.
No,
coffee with tea.